Paige told me to kind of get this thing started this morning. I want to tell you the truth. Sometimes it takes me 10 or 15 minutes to stand up here and calm down some. And whenever you get up here to get the speakers up here, you just don't have time enough to calm down. I want to tell you, whenever I look back on my life, it seemed like I was always a nervous person. I just never fit in. I just never was a part of. And then whenever I discovered what alcohol would do for me when I was 15 years old, I became addicted to it. I just took to it like a duck takes to water. And from then on, I sought to recapture that feeling that alcohol gave me the first time I experienced it. I made a mistake one time of standing up here and saying I had probably been locked up 40 times. Actually, I have no idea how many times I've been put in jail. Because back in the 60s, they used to lock a drunk up for just staggering. And anyway, I very quickly became a street drunk. From the time I was 23 years old, I'd served time in four different states and the District of Columbia. And then whenever I was 23 years old, of course, I got locked up for a long time. And I think what I really want to say is where I started to recover was in 1989, April 19th, 1989. And at that time, I had been in and around AA for 6 years. I had relapsed in this program on three different occasions after picking up a six-month chip. But I was trying to get sober practicing half measures. And on the morning of April 19th, 1989, I got up that morning, and I was dying from alcoholism. I was drinking myself to death. And I got down on my knees beside my bed. And I said, God, if you don't help me, I'm going to die. I said, please help me make it back to AA one more time. And if you will, I'll do anything that's necessary. And I came back into AA that time with a different attitude. I don't have to have a girlfriend, a car, a driver's license, a job. I don't have to have any of the things I felt like that I couldn't live my life without. The only thing I have got to do is just find a way to quit drinking. Or the way I like to look at it is find a way not to start back drinking. Because I have quit drinking many times. But I would always start back. So today I look at my life as having found a way not to start back. And because this program works, I have not had a drink of alcohol in 6 years and 2 months now. I think the other thing I wanted to say was, well, the first thing I did was take a fifth step, a good fifth step this time. And then I started working on these defects of character. And a prayer that I prayed that morning and a prayer that I still pray today is, I say, God, I'm not just willing to have these defects of character removed. Please remove from me every single defect of character that stands in the way of my being of maximum benefit to you and to my fellow man. And I'm willing to undergo any amount of pain that process might entail. And then I kind of just submit myself to God's discipline, you know. And I want you to know that all my life I've suffered from powerlessness. I'm just absolutely powerless over alcohol. I'm powerless over these instincts that have far exceeded their normal boundaries. And I think our textbook says that whenever it comes to these defects of character, we can't wish them away. There's not very much that we can do about them upon our own resources. And if these defects of character get removed, God is going to have to remove them. There's absolutely nothing that I can do about them, my sponsor, my home group, or any human power. And today I kind of look at it like this. The old man has to die so the new man can live. And I believe what you see today is not a cleaned up version of what the old man used to be. because the old man's too sick to be fixed. He can't be fixed, and he can't be cleaned up. He has to die so the new man can live. Our textbook calls it an entire psychic change. And anyway, I just want to thank y'all for loving me so much, and just thank you for letting me be a part of this wonderful conference that we have had down here this weekend. And I'm going to give these other guys a chance to say something now. And they couldn't possibly be more nervous than I am, so maybe that'll help them some. Our first speaker is a young man from Sanford. He's 19 years old, and he's been incarcerated now for 12 months, but he's getting ready to return to his community. And I hope that by the principles and the teachings of this program, that he will return to his community an asset. And if you will, please help me welcome Steve from Sanford.
My name's Steven, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Steve.
An alcoholic. Before I came to the rooms of AA, I had no idea what an alcoholic was. And I'm too young. That's the only thing I kept saying. How can I have that problem? That's people 60, 70 years old, people that their life's over with. But... But then I came in these rooms, and when I first started coming, I'm not going to lie, I came, you know, just to get off the floor or just to goof off. But after about four or five meetings, the volunteers were talking, and I finally got all the crap out of my ears, and I was sitting there listening. And what went in was knowledge. What went in was experience. What went in was stuff that had happened to me. That man was talking about my life up there. And it just hit right to home. And as soon as that volunteer, I'm not going to say any names because anonymity is a spiritual foundation, but as soon as that volunteer said those words about what had happened to him, I knew that I had a problem. And that's why I was on my road to recovery. Because before then, I was on a path to hell, really, you know what I'm saying, right off a cliff. But I'm really nervous about it. Just thought I'd tell y'all that. And I guess I start off like any other person. I just experimented when I was 10, 11 years old. Go sneak into dad's, you know, in the refrigerator, sample, test, catch a little buzz. Everything was all right. Go out with the friends and all that, 13 years old. Get wasted. Oh, we're like the grown-ups. Then my mom got in a car wreck when I was 14, and she had to go in the hospital for a while. For about 2 months, she had to have surgery and skin grafts. And I was going to school, and I was having to keep care of my brother and clean house, help cook. And I was 14 years old, and I felt like I had the weight of the world on my shoulders. And that's when I first started drinking, just to take me to another place, take me to a place where that I didn't have to go through all this. And it did, but it didn't last for long. And when I come down, it was just as bad or worse. And it just kept going. It's just like they say, that I've learned, that alcohol is a progressive disease. If you don't nip it now, it just keep coming back harder and stronger. I've done been to jails, institutions. There's only one place left for me. I might only be 19 years old. And a lot of the old-timers might look at me like I don't know anything. But I probably don't, but I'm learning. I'm wanting to learn with you. It's because the whole weekend that I've been here, the volunteers have been talking about their experience and all that. And I just want to say to them that I'm happy that there's volunteers that go to in these correctional units. They don't have to. They do it on their own free time. And they do it for people like me. The one that I had to... hundreds and 200s and 300s that actually listen and finally get it through their head. But I'm really a anyway. This meeting here is for the volunteers. I just want to, right now I want to give a hand for the volunteers. They all go to correctional units. And before I close out, I like to say a poem that I wrote when after I was doing my fifth step, and after I did my fifth step with a certain person, it felt like I was free, that a weight that I've been carrying around for years and years had finally been taken off of me. I could jump. I could almost feel like I could fly. But I like to read it right now. Looking back, the life I live now is far different from the past. I've decided to move up the ladder, to have a commitment and make it last. I'm doing something for myself to get my life on the right track. Not afraid where I came from, and not scared to look back. It's all right to sit and ponder and to think back for a few, to remember that cunning enemy and the hell he put me through. He made my life unmanageable and almost drove me insane. I thought I was thinking clearly, but I wasn't even using my brain. I cared about no one except for alcohol and myself. I took my family for granted. I put their love upon the shelf. So about this time, I knew it was my fault. I'd hurt too many people. It was time for me to get caught. So now I sit in prison with recovery on my mind and knowing now in my heart it was AI I had to find. I'd like to thank y'all for letting me share.
Steve, that was just great. You did a good job. Our next speaker is Junior from Hamlet, and I think he's a fine young man, too, who is trying his best to get his life straightened out. So, if you will, please help me give a big welcome to Junior.
I'm Junior. I'm an alcoholic. Very nervous one, too. I'm from Hamlet, and I'm pretty well known around there for the things I did when I was an alcoholic. And I'm gonna start this off by telling you what it was like at first and how I got in starting this. My dad was an alcoholic, and he used to leave beer around on the tables and stuff, and I was just a little kid and about 4 years old. My mother said I used to go around and drink his beer, and they used to look for me and find me passed out somewhere about 4 years old. And after all that, and family broke up a little bit, and I got shoved over to my grandma because my father went one way, my mother went another way. And I stayed with her until I was about 15. And through them years, I was trying to find a love that was, I just could never find. And I hung around with guys older than me. I was about 11 years old when I first started really drinking. And then when I first started drinking, there came the jails, the institutions, and everything. It's just, ever since I started drinking, I've been falling back into the vicious cycle, going back out, doing the same things over and over again, and just coming back to institutions and jails. And when I finally realized that I had a problem was when I done this, what I done now to get time I got. And with the alcoholic I was, when I was sitting in jail, I realized that I had a problem with alcohol. And I said, I'm going to get me some, I was calling my wife, said, I'm going to get me some help and stuff and everything. And they got me out. 30 days later, I was back in jail. They done had me locked back up for DUI. I got plenty of help. 30 days, got back locked up in jail. And then that stinking thinking, we call it, it just kept telling me, well, I'm fixing to catch time anyway. Go ahead and have your fun while you're having it. And when I finally did catch, just I went and I didn't even try to get no AAs or anything when I first caught my time. I stayed depressed all the time, and I try to use other things to cover up that depression. And soon after they got me to a camp where I was going to be at for a while, I had this friend I talked to all the time, and one night they called AA over the intercom, and he came to me and he said, you said you drink and everything. He said, you want to go to a meeting with me? I said, no, not really. And he finally talked me into it. I went. I liked things I heard. I heard things that I've done. I heard my story coming from other people. And that first meeting really meant a lot, because I've been coming back ever since. And then I went down about 6 months after I was down. I went to a Dart in Goldsboro, and I really never knew any love. You know, the meetings, we sat around and shared things about us and everything, but inmates and stuff, they don't really love. I got to Goldsboro, and I really found love in that, in them walls. Love that I ain't never had. I left there, I kept on carrying on with meetings and everything. And I had a chance to go back and work there. And I met a lot of people. And people mean something to me today. I know these people love me, and I love them. And I don't know where I'm going to from here, but they say it's going to get better, and it's been getting better the whole time. But I realized just today when I got here, I've never been to an outside meeting. And after I was here for a while, I felt the love in these walls. And it's love that I can't explain. And I really appreciate how everyone's been coming up to me and speaking to me and everything. It's because I never had any friends. Friends I had on the street before, they didn't come around me anymore. They didn't know what to expect of me. I run them all off. Well, when I get out, I'm glad I run them all off. But AA is a way of life for me today. And I know that for me to live a life, I got to work a life. And AA is the life that I got to work if I'm going to live a life. And I owe a lot to a few people here. Steve, Don, Frank, Bill, Lester. Henry, Steve, I mean, Sam, all the guys that really had give me motivation when everything seemed down to me. Because if I wouldn't have had these people in my life, I could end up doing the same things I was doing, because it's what I usually done when I got depressed and I didn't have people to talk to that really cared. I go out, I saw that right quick. I can go take me a drink and I feel better then. But the next day it's right back. But these people here that show me their love, I go talk to them about it and it's gone. It don't come back the next day. And I'd just like to thank everyone for having me here today. It really means a lot to me to have this chance and opportunity. And I thank you.
Thank you, Junior. You did a real good job, too. Well, this next young man. I have been told that he's got 30 minutes to kind of wrap this thing up with here. So if you will, please give me a big please give a big welcome to George from Cary.
I'm George and I'm an alcoholic. Many people know me as George A., and some of you know me as G. Ash, just so I'm anonymous, and that's all that counts. I did want you to know I brought along some notes here, just some key words to keep me going. Potatoes, bread, milk, cat. Well, I think that's the wrong list. You say 30 minutes. I thought that was an hour and 30. It's 30 minutes. Well, he took the clock away. He took the clock away.
That's how he
winded up. Oh, okay. Tom said there was a calendar up here, though. Well, I guess I'll be just kind of talking, you know, like off the top of my head here. You may have noticed that I'm wearing a hat. You may have, and you may not have. See, and the hat is just kind of my trademark. I just love this hat, and you can tell it looks like I even sleep in it. But a very pretty lady gave me this hat. It wasn't what I asked her for, but she said I'd know what. She said I'd know what to do with the hat. Oh, good Lord. What a marvelous honor it is to be a part of Correction Facilities and Alcoholics Anonymous, to be here with you all. It's a very humbling experience, and you may know that I'm one that's very proud of my humility. A little background here, if you will. My home group is the Cary 12-Step Group in Cary, North Carolina, and certainly invite you when you're in the Cary area to please come to our Cary 12-Step Group. We meet every Saturday night, and I did promise Jim H. that I would point out again that you see the Cary 12-Step Group for, I think it's been 3 or 4 years in a row now, has been nominated once again as the very top AA group in all of Area 51. And many people were not aware that these studies are made like this, these surveys, but they're done every year by the Cary 12-Step Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. Also, I filled the chair as the correctional facilities coordinator for District 31, my home district. People say, how do you get elected as a correction facilities chairperson for your district? I'm at a little bit of a loss there. I had returned from the bathroom and they cheered me, you know, and so that's about all I can say about that. Now, people wonder, well, you know, I too go through this nervousness bit and will certainly pause and stutter for a bit, but that's okay. I know because I'm here with my family that that's okay. I want to identify myself as my home district, as my home group and everything, because you see, that's important, is that if you'll notice in all everything concerning Alcoholics Anonymous, the major word, that driving word in our fellowship is we. The we this, the we that, in every, all of our steps, our traditions, our literature, there's very, you know, about the only exception to that is in our statement of intent. In other words, the only time that the word I comes up very obviously is in when it's talking about someone reaching out. When someone is reaching out for the hand of AA, then I am responsible. Other than that, there's a tremendous amount of we involved there. So when I walk into my home group of Alcoholics Anonymous, George becomes a part of we. That is a very radical change from many, many years of I. That is a very healthy part of this alcoholic's growth today. Even in the mornings and in the evenings in talking with God, the term we is used almost interchangeably for I. We are grateful for today. We ask your guidance for this day that we're starting. This is a much healthier way of living. It's a very radically different way of living than the George of many years ago. Yesterday, there was four of us fellas. We went out to dinner, and as we were going through the line, a little majorette, she rings up mine and gives me this ticket, and then my friend that was right behind me, his was more. And I thought, well, what is that all about? Well, you see, I had gotten the senior citizen's discount. Hell, she didn't even ask, you know? And there was a time when that type of a thing would have offended me, but now being very broke, of course, I tend to like it. But I got to thinking, you know, that wasn't it just a week or maybe a month ago that I was riding around in the Georgia mountains in a antique Porsche with a little majorette sitting over at the side just grinning and giggling? Wasn't that a week or was that a month or was that really 15 years ago, you know? We've all heard the expression "time's fun when you're having flies." Something like that? And that is the truth. Where did the time go? Where did it go? 15 years ago, I was in Bergdorf Goodman buying things I wanted. 15 days ago, I was in the Goodwill store buying things I needed. I have far less than I had when I was a young kid in college. I have so much more to share today than I ever had in my life. Now, that is a bit of a dichotomy there, but it is the honest truth. Today, I have so much to share, but when there was so much that I had, there was nothing there for you. Today, everything is more of ours. It's we. We're in this together. Every person here on the panel has got up and talked a little bit about George, so that'll save us all a lot of time. it is still my favorite subject, of course. I have a sponsor, just like any alcoholic that really wants this thing, my sponsor certainly says dumb things. I sponsor quite a number of people, and I say very intelligent things to them. I am a service junkie. The reason that I have found, here's the thing, you see, one thing about Alcoholics Anonymous to the young people just beginning this path, it's so exciting, you know, to see a young person starting this path. I caution you, it can make you very dumb because, you see, when I got here in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, this was a very different place. Even sponsors were a very strange breed of people, you know. They talked real weird. But it was a very difficult place to get along with because, you see, I knew so much. And I could see, you know, my revisions of the 12 steps and things. I never could get anyone's attention with this information. And then through the years, what happened, though, is I've gotten dumber and dumber and dumber because today I stand here before you knowing very little about how to stay sober. But what I'll do is just about every night I get into a meeting and I find out a little something about how to stay sober. It's a 24-hour process, one that I'm grateful to finally know how to approach this situation. But today, you ask me a lot of questions, and many times I will, you know, want to reach around and dig up that big book because that's where the answer is. And people even say, George, why are you such a service junkie? And I don't even have to memorize that anymore because, hey, that answer is right here in the big book also. I spend a great deal of time passing on what I learned to others who want and need it badly. And I do it for four reasons. One, a sense of duty. Two, it's a pleasure. And three, because in so doing, I am paying my debt to the man or woman who took time to pass it on to me. And four, because every time I do, I take it out, I am taking out a little more insurance for myself against a possible slip. So you see, there's very little that I have to need to know today because there is always a big book. That got wet and shrunk. But I can go to the big book and get the answer. Now, why in the world would George be up here in this light on this particular panel? Because, you see, I'm one of those characters we hear about in the meetings. As the only time I ever even got arrested, that was for indecent exposure. I got off of that on a technicality as a lack of evidence. But for whatever the reason that I must be a part of the correction facilities process. Now, I will pull on your leg a little bit every once in a while here, you know. But for whatever the reason that I am here as a very integral part of the correction facility process of carrying that message, I really can't answer that other than what I read to you just a moment ago. I know that it's where I belong, and I feel it within the spirit, so that's enough today to guide me. I will say that there is very little reward. There is very little track record of marvelous accomplishments to look back on, you see. And so that is what keeps a lot of people away from the process. But you see, all we need is that one person to be able to look to. And all of the people that are right there in my own community, one of my very best friends is a man that I had met quite some years ago. And the theme of our being here today, Freedom from Bondage, this man years ago looked at me when we first met, and he was telling me about how Alcoholics Anonymous had freed him, had set him free. And, you know, the guy that was having that conversation, one, is in the room with us today, a very successful working man who has a very nice automobile, much nicer than mine. Of course, most people do. He has a little son that I've held. He is a very contributing part of society today, and he was standing there in the traditional greens, Junior, telling me that Alcoholics Anonymous had set him free. And I've heard that many times, Wally, since that time. Other people saying, in a confined environment, Alcoholics Anonymous set me free. And that's why I know it is okay. I must keep coming back, just like I must keep coming back to pick up my messages of how to stay sober today. Alcoholics Anonymous in the prison system, from this alcoholic's viewpoint, is Alcoholics Anonymous. Period. What's the difference about what people are wearing? What is their sex? What is their color or their national origin? Who really, you know, does it really matter? I think of some of the real marvelous characters that I have met in Alcoholics Anonymous, many of them in the prison system. And I always think about the old boy, we called him Buck. So and Buck's a really popular fella in the prison system. He really felt like he was a clairvoyant. You know? Now, in prison, you got to be a little careful because they'll look for the weak spot in you and they'll play on it, as we all know that have been around this environment. And so Buck got quite a bit of harassment about being a clairvoyant, but he was very sincere about it. And he'd say, man, if you want to talk to your dead grandmother, you just let me know, George. And I, okay, Buck, yep. And so he got a lot of harassment about that. But the other thing that was so difficult about old Buck is he was also a midget. Now, you can well imagine what that was. Well, the pressure got so bad on old Buck that he finally went over the fence, man. And I didn't know a thing about it. And, you know, the next morning I opened up the paper, and there it was in big headlines, small, medium, at large. You got to watch me. You got to watch me. I challenge you, though, in carrying the message of Alcoholics Anonymous into the prison system is a plant. What we're doing, we're planting a seed. That's it. You see, we have a message. Let's forget the messenger. Let's talk about the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, how in the world can you tell? What we'll do, my second home group is the Wake Correctional Center, located there in Raleigh. And the Wake Correctional Center, we have a very healthy AA group. Tom has come out and spoke at it with us and was in awe at that group. And I was sitting out there just like anyone else. You know, I had come to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I was not a guru. I was in an AA meeting, and that AA meeting was conducted by the members of Alcoholics Anonymous. It had the same pattern that any AA meeting anywhere else was. That is an exceptionally healthy feeling to another alcoholic to know that I'm responsible for helping plant that seed, and then I can plant it out there, and then, you know, help it along a little bit as quietly as possible, and watch it grow to where it is a pure Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. That is the way that my second home group there at the Wake Correctional operates, and we're very pleased with the group. It is even as much as possible self-supporting. But in many cases, people say, how in the world, you know, because many of our groups depend on the outside sponsors, which I represent my home group when I go in there. There's no I alcoholic, it's a we alcoholic. I go in there and I talk about my home group, the Cary 12-step group, which, did I tell you that was the... Yeah, I told you about that. Yeah, that's the finest group. Okay. And but the thing is, an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, have you ever been in one where, you know, all the books and the literature and everything got locked up and it's time for the meeting and nobody's here with the key? If you've got a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you can have an AA meeting. How does a typical meeting get started? Well, usually... I'm talking about now in a prison, in a men's or a women's, or back in the Cary 12-step group or your own home group. How does it start out? You've got someone from the group that gets up and agrees to chair that meeting, and they'll usually start out by talking about what Alcoholics Anonymous is. That's our preamble. I bet you that most every one of us have got a copy of that right in our wallet, or we've got a grapevine that's got that in it. Any of our brochures tell us what the preamble that of who we are. We're a fellowship of men and women who share our experience, strength, and hope with each other. We go on, we talk about being self-supporting. On and on like that. That's the opening. That's our preamble. Did you ever wonder where this stuff came from? Too often we can sit in a meeting and then this chanting goes on and then we all start talking. But it has a basis. Then we open this book up here into a chapter called How It Works. And there it is. Rarely have we seen a person fail who's thoroughly followed our steps. And we can go into saying how it works. Then that covers our steps. You know, good Lord, when I looked at those steps when I first got here, they're hanging up on the wall, and I'm analyzing those things as I'm accustomed to doing in most every situation. And I'm looking at those steps, and I'm thinking, good God, man, look at that. You're wanting me. I want to stop drinking, and you're wanting me to become a Mother Teresa. You know. And I'll never get in the habit. We'll pause for a moment, and I ask the you lapsed Catholics if you'll turn to the Baptist sitting beside you and explain that to them. With everyone that has stood up here has told me George's story. It's all the same. All of us at some point in our lives got to that point that Richard talked about, that Keith spoke about. All of us got there. And we know today the value of prayer. And we know, too, that sometimes our prayers perhaps are maybe, in our view, not answered, because I'm one of those who can say there were prayers that were not answered. Let me explain that. I got here on Saturday because on Friday evening there was something very important, some kind of maintenance work on my sobriety that needed to be taken care of Friday night, and that was I needed to go to a meeting there in my local community and stand up with the people who are a part of the community of AA there with me and pick up a blue chip that had Hoyle written on it. And that blue chip was for 13 years of being sober. Now, for the first time, I needed to stand up there to show these people an alcoholic has been sober for 13 years and has had no booze whatsoever. I used to have non-drinking Saturdays, and I think the best I ever did was about 12:30 noon. I probably got up at 10. There was one particular day that was a non-drinking Saturday. About 2 o'clock, I was just absolutely wasted, as I'm sure you can very well picture. This was a non-drinking Saturday. I was so frustrated that, believe me, I did this. It takes dexterity, the first order, but I punched myself in the mouth. That is how frustrated I was. To this very day, about maybe 14 years later, there is a small scar on the inside of my mouth where I punched myself in the mouth because I couldn't stop drinking. Isn't that something? Now, that is not where my teeth went, no. You're probably thinking, well, God, he must have done that a lot of times. No, that was Mother Nature did that. My thought flew away. It'll usually come back, though. But that is, now there is a mite of a paradox, if you will. Here's a person punching himself in the mouth because he can't stop drinking, and now he's standing up in front of a group of people and getting a chip that says 13 years of not drinking. So let's not confuse those two. That is the same human being that was standing up there and picking up that blue chip. But you see, there was a very big difference. This human being did something that a word that is very familiar to many of us. I surrender. You see, I had to give up. I did not know how to do it, so I came in here. And you all have been keeping George sober now, and you have done it for 13 straight years, and George couldn't do it for a day. So let's don't get impressed with George, but please, for God's sakes, get impressed with Alcoholics Anonymous. That is what can happen whether you're in a prison or in a church basement. That is what is before us, that potential to take a human being who is going home at night, getting down on his knees and begging God, please do not let me wake up. And yet, 13 years later, the man stands up and says, look, 13 years, it's been that long. You know? Now, that is extremely impressive, and that's the kind of message that we need to keep in our hearts, because, you see, the biggest part of that 13 years has been in when George discovered that you can take the M in me and you flip that sucker upside down, and there is a way of life right there. By just turning one letter over, you can turn your life around. George did that. George is sober today because he turned it over, and now it's we. This is how. So that's why George belongs in a prison. He sure does. If there's alcoholics in there, they won't let me in the women's prisons. I think that I told you everything I knew a long time ago, but I think it is about a time to summarize, and to challenge each and every one of you is that the awesome feeling of being part of a we that can go to a place maybe that got a little bit forgotten, perhaps. But absolutely, we need to be there. There are alcoholics in the prison. There are alcoholics who are unaware of it. And you and I may know it, you know. Let's be realistic. We can spot our, you know, ourselves. I'm in a room full of people, and I know every one of you. Dear Lord, I know you in my heart, and I think you know me too. That's who we are. And there's a lot of marvelous stories of people and the travels that I have made through the years, for example, and finding people in the fellowship in the most unique ways when I've always needed them the most. Some little expression that I would say, and somebody would say, George, wait a minute, I think I know who you are. And I'd say, I've been looking all over for you, my friend. Let's walk down the hall and get a cup of coffee. We are a worldwide fellowship. And great day, that's, there aren't even diet plans that big, you know. I'm always loaded with information of wisdom here. If to any of the people in our fellowship who are interested in dieting, I do have some advice for you in that regard. Stay away from cottage cheese. That shocks people. Stay away from cottage cheese. That's the truth. And now, this is not scientifically based. What I'm getting at is the next time you're in the grocery store, you look. The only people buying that stuff is fat people. Now, what has that got to do? I don't know. We are a fellowship of men and women who share our experience, strength, and hope with each other, that we may help each other. At no point in that dialogue does it talk about geography or fences or trees or anything. So, you see, if there is a suffering alcoholic, then we're coming back to that I. Yes, there is an I there. I am responsible if that hand reaches out. I must be there. There's something inside of George today that is very different when that M flipped over. And now we need to be out there, because it's the greatest feeling in the world to give when you have so little and it's so much. You know, I would like to say there's a little story that for some reason has absolutely touched me, that I like to leave with people when I share with your groups. And Tom, I can publicly thank you very much for the opportunity of having been with your home group that some few weeks back. Please tell the lady that brought the collards I'm in love. getting out like that is a marvelous opportunity to share the story of my alcoholism and to experience the strength and the marvelous hope that I have today. Certainly we make mistakes. It's not as bad as the fellow. I did want to also take just a moment and thank the folks from California that were here with us, the people from New Jersey. My sponsor of a number of years died here almost a year ago, and he was from New Jersey. He had so many years sobriety that on his little gold coin that's had a bunch of X's and V's, and then it says continued next coin, you know. And but God bless him. He was a marvelous human being, Hank, and I know where he is today. The gentleman that will speak with us later on the agenda, if I ever sit down, from Canada, we certainly welcome you and thank you. I at one time spent some time in Timmins, Ontario, and brought new meaning to the expression "drink Canada dry." With Alcoholics Anonymous, Here is what Alcoholics Anonymous says to George, regardless of where we are. And that is, I have since age about 5 been a fanatic reader, and about every night this is how I go to sleep, is reading something. One evening in the Reader's Digest, I believe it was, several years back, there was a little filler in there that was one of those little things just to fill up some space. And in this filler, someone was talking about the sequoia tree, the giant sequoia. This tree is bigger than an AA's line. I mean, the humongous, overwhelming trunks of these trees, and you would think that a tree so massive must have a root that would go 20 stories straight down in the ground. That's not true. It's an extremely shallow-rooted tree. Now, how in the world can such a massive thing stay upright if it is shallow-rooted? Well, here's the key. You see, the sequoia, number one, this massive tree, you never see a single tree. They are always in clumps, coveys, whatever we call them, whole mess of them for us Southerners, you know. And these shallow roots are just millions of shallow roots that go out over a very vast area, and they intermingle among the shallow roots of the other sequoia trees. Now, what happens is when the wind and the rain and the storms come along, they are literally supporting each other. What a marvelous thing to have read that evening. I will probably never forget that. That tells the story of Alcoholics Anonymous, Richard. That tells us why we're here. Why should we go to the prison with Junior here? This is the answer. God bless you so much for the work you're doing. What an honor to be a part of it. And I'm certainly closed by saying, yes, we'll make mistakes. We're not perfect. And there's a line also in here that says that we are not saints. And we can keep going, though. We can depend on each other when the storms come through and the rains, and we'll stay upright. We can stay sober. We can do it. I can't, but we sure can. And take our mistakes and learn from them. But I was going to say to the folks here from New Jersey, we did have this. We've got a lot of people down in Cary from New Jersey. I think they call that the concentrated area for relocated Yankees. That's what they call Cary there. But we did have a fellow from New Jersey that I spent a year one week in Camden. There was a fellow from New Jersey that was chairing a local meeting there, and he made the big mistake. You know, see, we're down here in the South, okay? As he made the mistake of asking a dairy farmer to give out chips, and that was a big mess, I'll tell you. At this point, I ask the good Southerner, if you will, turn to the Yankee next to you and explain that one to them. God bless you. Thank you so much for being here with us.
Oh, my God. Well, we've got a little gift you'll be willing to give George for the good job you did. Thank you.
Oh, thank you very much. What an honor.
And I'm going to tell you one little story, and then we're going to all sit down. I first heard Wallace talk about this some years ago over in Greensboro. He talked about the bird dogs watch. And the bird dogs are the guys that stand at the fence waiting for the AA sponsor to show up. And anyway, I've been the outside AA sponsor at Lexington Prison Camp for the last 5 years. And I had anyway, I had heard Wallace talk about this, and one day, maybe I had been down there for a year or two, and I pulled up out there one Saturday morning, and you know, my car was facing the fence, and I looked up on the yard, and there's one of the guys who attends the meetings regularly. He was standing up there. And he took a real good look just to make sure that that was me. And then he went back in the cell block and he came out and had his big book in his hand. And he took one more look. And then he headed down to the trailer where the meeting's at. And I knew that morning what Wallace was talking about the bird dog's watch. And sitting in my car that morning, that warm feeling just came over me. You know, the feeling that you get whenever you've had an extra long prayer and meditation, that warm feeling when all the fear goes away and the anxiety. And I got that feeling that morning sitting on the front seat of my car. And I tell the guys that at Lexington Prison Camp sometimes that they do more for me than I do for them. And I think that they think that I just say that because it's a good thing to say. But the truth is, the guys at the New Hope Group at Lexington Prison Camp have done far more for my life than I could ever possibly do for them.